Hello, filmmakers, and welcome to the Wedding Film School AMA show, hosted by Jason McCutcheon and myself, Jared Haskell. This is the show where we answer your questions, directly diving into the creative, business, and personal aspects of running a successful wedding film brand. If you have a submission, feel free to connect at www.weddingfilm.school/AMA. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Wedding Film School show, AMA. My name is Jared Haskell. I'm a photographer, filmmaker, and business owner here with Jason McCutcheon. Jason, want to introduce yourself?
I'm a filmmaker.
Okay.
That's my identity.
Yeah.
But also, I love educating people on wedding filmmaking and just growing. You know, one of the things I like about this, Jared?
No.
I
could take some stabs at it.
Yeah. No. I like that this is one of like the few careers that you can get into that has demand. It's a growth industry, and like you can just quit your job at someday. Like how just by doing something fun that you're good at. And so that's kind of what we're here for, helping people live that dream and also make better work and ultimately elevate the industry.
Yep. Yep. And if you are new here, Jason and myself, we actually run currently three different successful wedding film companies, all at different pricing tiers. So we have a little bit of input on, you know, how to run a successful wedding film company. I totally agree with you, man. I think wedding films are super rewarding and hopefully AI proof into the future. Just saw, man, there's huge layoffs at UPS, right? And they had...
Are you sure they didn't do that years ago and that's why they can't do anything?
Well, they just had a big union contract that they signed. I don't know if you saw that, but it was mostly
big into union news.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's actually a pro-union show
here.
But essentially all the jobs that are being stolen are like white-collar jobs. So, you know, it got me thinking about like wedding films and like how stable this industry is.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think is like... I don't know.
It's very unique. It requires a lot of certain skills, and so that's good. And it also is a luxury product overall, so that's good. I mean, there's a lot of positives from an economic standpoint, and it's also fun. So from a creative standpoint, it's fun. So anyway, what are we doing today? And what do we do on this show?
So what we do on the Wedding Film School AMA is to Ask Me Anything, where we are talking to listeners of the show specifically and questions that they submit in. If you have a question, feel free to go on to weddingfilm.school/AMA. You can type in your own question. And if you've been submitting questions and we're not able to get to it, make sure you are submitting every week, guys. We are doing this show we haven't really decided how often we're going to do the show.
We're going to leave this in.
Okay.
So it's raw.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be doing at least 24 episodes on the air.
Okay. Okay. So,
so
the hope is twice a week. You know, I think in the past it's been hard to get out in the middle of wedding
twice
season.
Twice a month. Not a week.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Twice a month. Yeah. So that's kind of the hope. And we've really been enjoying this. I like this new kind of format. It is a newer format for us. But it's a lot of fun because we get to ask exactly what people, what's on people's minds. So without any further ado, do you have any other things that you would like to mention?
If you didn't go to Clarity, you missed out. It was a great time.
Yeah,
so
losers.
We're going to be announcing more of that coming up. So next time we do something, you should come.
Yep. Sounds good. All right, let's dive right in. First person, Sam, he says, this is so exciting. Or he or she, I don't know. Says, this is so exciting. Glad you guys are doing this. I have a question about your business model. It seems like you guys operate a pretty large team. When did you decide to do this, and how hard was it to bring on your first full-time person? Where do you find people? How do you determine if they're worth investing in? And how long do you... hang on. How long do you determine if they'd be worth investing in, and how do you prevent them from taking all they've learned to start a competing business?
So this is like every question possible about building teams.
Yeah, yeah. Which
probably
is actually...
Probably won't get to all of those because, you know, maybe we'll do a workshop on that.
Well, yeah.
It's
actually something that I talked about at Clarity. So mm-hmm. you should have been there, Sam.
Yeah. But I think in general, I think the general question is people have is A, so first, why did you decide to do this? So that's personal. And then B, how do you get people and like know who's a good investment? So right. I think that we'll simplify the question out of that. You know, I was thinking about that the other day in terms of our journey. And like, it's kind of hard to really trace it back exactly. Like, I don't really remember planning to do this. I feel like we got a bunch of inquiries. And I think this is maybe a good thing to put in people's minds. A lot of things in business are planned, and you have systems and all that junk. But a lot of things in your business are going to be based on what's happening and you making decisions, how to solve the problems. And I think for us, if I remember back, the first thing that happened is we needed some help at something. And like, there was a person, honestly, like there was a kid who got sent over to us for like a high school project. Like he wanted to like get into filmmaking, and the mother knew us from, I think we shot their daughter's wedding or something, or their niece's wedding. And they're like, well, these boys might like, so he interviewed us for his school project, and we're like, oh, come and shoot with us. That's kind of happenstance, right?
Yeah, I think we found the person first, actually, before mm-hmm. we decided to make it worthwhile, which is kind of a different
we didn't even
experience than most people.
But I don't
people.
Think we planned on teams at that point.
No, I think we just wanted someone to carry our bags. And
he wanted to come with us.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah.
So we were like, okay, you can.
Yes.
So we did, and we were like, oh, this guy's kind of good. And then, of course, I think by nature of having two of us, we started getting multiple inquiries mm-hmm. in a day, and I think we wanted to say yes. And I think that's really what it was for us, is we wanted to be able to make more money. Mm-hmm. We wanted to be able to double our income on a Saturday, and we were comfortable splitting up, and that's probably how it started.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think when we first started, we didn't name our company like J&J Video or Photo or whatever. It was... at the time, we had a photographer, too, when we first started. I think within the first year, we had a girl who was interested in doing photo for us. We were like, sure, yeah, we'll advertise. You're good. Like, so I think even before we met Josh, who was our first guy, we had someone who was interested in doing photography. So I think it even started with our company name, because we didn't want to just it to be our names. I remember us having kind of a conversation up front about, you know, that was kind of our methodology, is just, you know, it's not going to be our names. And so it kind of was easy to develop into like a real just company and not just about me or not just about you. So yeah, that's kind of what started it. You know, when it comes to, you know, diving into the team side,
like real teams, like I think there was probably was a point where we were like, let's have teams.
Right. Let's go. And it was when, you know, Josh had a certain ceiling that we were just like, hey, we either are going to let this kid shoot or not. He's really good. He could do it. People love him. He was young. So it was like, that was the biggest hump to just be like, hey, here's a kid who looks like he's 16 years old shooting your wedding. You spent thousands of dollars on it. But we had a lot of confidence in who he was, and, you know, gave him small bites at first. And over time, it just kind of worked out, right?
Yeah, I wonder if, like, to me, like, the time where we first started really doing teams was not until we really started doing, like, 100 weddings.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of feel like if you're doing two weddings in a day, that's not really teams to me. That's, like, an associate. Mm. Like, when we were, like, having to navigate, like, 3 to 4 weddings in a day, that's when it really was like, oh, we're running teams. Mm-hmm. And... it was much more like, part of why we're doing this is because it was for us, there was nobody who we could refer to mm-hmm. in terms of like the way we wanted to run our teams and like actually train people. And so we were just winging it in terms of, but the only thing I'll say in our defense, or not in our defense, but in really to argue that point, we weren't winging it, is both Jared and I have teaching backgrounds. Both of us are used to working with young people. We do have that advantage. So I don't want you to think like we've never trained someone. We both trained people and actually taught people how to edit and how to shoot and how to be on sets. So it was a natural extension of what we were already doing. But anyway, that's kind of our choice. Most of it was we wanted to make money.
Yeah, yeah. And I think also, like, at first at least, there was a lot of luck involved. And, like, we just had, like, really good people be interested in joining after that. And we just got lucky. I think we had a really high hit rate early on. You know, and as we've grown, that hasn't necessarily, you know, rung true.
We definitely go through more people.
We go through a lot more people. You know, this is something that I kind of work on a lot, is just like team culture and like who we're bringing on. Like, these things are like really important to us. You know, I would say you have to have a pretty solid identity before you start bringing people on. Of just like, these are the people that we want to be kind of involved. Like, they can't have this kind of attitude or whatever. They can't think that they, you know, their shit don't stank. You know, I think we all know a lot of filmmakers that feel that way. And you know, they have to work within our culture. So you have to have a pretty solid identity, I think, early on. Otherwise, you bring people on and your identity is going to shift to whoever they are, right? That first person, I think, has to be just a super core person that you're going to really trust a lot. And then after that, everyone that you add on really starts morphing into whoever, you know, you tell them they are. Mm. I think that's been pretty pivotal to our success.
But what about to his second part of their question?
Like, where do we find them?
Yeah, like maybe just one tip, because I think you can get this is a very, very deep subject, but mm-hmm. I think it's let's throw them a bone, because I think if you're trying to do this, I'm assuming that they're trying to also build teams. So what would you tell somebody beyond get lucky?
Yeah. So practically, the answer is find them everywhere. That is the answer. I've found people on Facebook groups. I've found people on LinkedIn. I've reached out to local technical programs. I've reached out to local churches in the middle of nowhere, Vermont. I know people personally. I've posted to Facebook and friends have recommended. My mom has given us quite a few people because she's in the dental office. She has sent me some people in the past. People within our organization have said, hey, I know someone. He's young or she's young. Like, I think they'd be interested. Brothers, sisters, everywhere. Like, that's where you actually find them. I think it's a matter of just having your ears open to who that person is. Now, this person oftentimes is going to be pretty useless to start. And I think mm-hmm. that's where a lot of people are confused. They think like we're yes. picking up fully developed, like, you know, raw assets or fully developed assets. They're very much raw. Like, we get them. And I would say the first thing that I look for is like, is this a good person? Do I feel like this person's going to lie to me? Like, just basic, like, do they have good character?
On time?
Do they come on time? Like, if are they a super flake? Like, dude, if someone like, if like, I have a couple people coming to meet me today, three people coming today that I'm talking to. So this is perfect to talk about. If they're late, that's a big red flag for me. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it might seem like, oh yeah, there's traffic, whatever. It's like, oh no, but just know that's an indicator for me. Like, of like, if they're late for something like this.
Yeah, you got to know what your non-negotiables are. Yeah. And probably you should get rid of ones that have to do with being good at shooting.
Right, right, right.
Like you can't consistently build if you need someone to be developed to come to you. Because why would just think about it from their perspective. Why would someone who's good enough to do their own thing want to work with you? A, they either actually aren't good enough and they can't get booked, so that's actually counterproductive. Or B, they actually are good enough but are terrible at running a business, because they have, usually that means they have something wrong with them. Mm-hmm. There's something you're not going to want to import into your company.
Yep.
And so I would agree, yeah, start fresh, start raw, have some non-negotiables, and then also have your milestones. Like, have something that you in your mind are looking to either help them do or help them not do, but mm-hmm. like, make them very simple, like, and have day ones and like early stuff, instead of like, oh yeah, if this guy, they shot a wedding and it was really good. It's like, we don't let someone shoot a wedding for us sometimes till they assisted at like 60 events
at least. Yeah,
like, you are literally doing something that I would spend 18 months doing in after you just met a person 30 days from mm-hmm. your thing. And it's like, I think people highly underestimate how patient we are and how impatient they are. And I would say, if you want to do teams, you got to be patient and you got to be clear.
Yep. Yep. And you know, the second part of the question, you know, I don't know, how do you determine if they're worth investing in?
And
how
I think we kind of said that.
Well, the second part is how do you prevent them from taking all they've learned, all you've taught them, all that investment,
you can't, right?
Into, you know, starting a competing business. And I would say you can't. We've had a couple people do that. I would say there's probably like a right way and a wrong way to do that. You know, if you're coming in to just like, hey, I'm going to work for a little bit, I'm going to try to steal contacts and do all that stuff, like that's obviously the wrong way. Like you're creating a competitor in me that wants to destroy you if you flip that on me. Like, and you know, I'm bigger and probably better than you, so I probably will. It doesn't really worry me that much because I think we do a really good job up front of just like creating that team culture. I've had one person who's like, hey, I don't know what my year is going to look like this next year. We're all over the place. And they're like, you know, so I can't really commit, but I think I'm going to shoot some weddings next year. They didn't use what they've done for us against us. And you know, they essentially are like, hey, have my blessing, man. I want to see you successful in whatever you do. And, you know, you have a skill and you should be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, there's a right and wrong way to do it with just like a level of respect. But I think if you create a team culture, especially with video, it's a little bit easier, I think, for photographers to just go out and do their own thing. Some videographers just want to shoot and some videographers just want to edit.
One thing I would add is if you are willing to provide all the gear, that will help with retention.
Yes, that's very true. Practically, yes. Yeah,
like, because if someone's like, I don't want to start my own thing, that's going to cost me $30,000.
Right.
You know, like, people will stick around just because they don't want to downgrade and it's not fun for them. And the other thing I was going to say is just be very upfront with people. Just tell them straight up, like, hey, listen, don't try to get planners' numbers. That's not appropriate if you want to. But also, like, here's how you can use the footage if you leave, or here's how you can't leave the footage. Just like anything that you want and expect in that relationship, have the conversation. And like, you know, you can calibrate it and you can figure out how much you want to run a person off or not. But like, I think I remember someone telling me when it comes to performance reviews, like at jobs as a boss, no one you're working for should be surprised when they get a bad performance review. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way about most things when you're working with people, is like, if someone wants to leave your thing, they shouldn't be surprised when you're like, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. You should just make that up front. And if the person's like, well, no, that was my whole plan, is to take your stuff and build my own portfolio, and then that person's not going to work with you. They're going to be gone. Right. They're going to be like, I don't want to work with you.
Yep.
And you'll both be happier.
Yep. 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 Totally. Totally. All right. So let's move on. Long question there. Next question. So I've heard other people weigh on this before, and I'm curious as to your opinion. Should I have my pricing on my website, list a starting rate, or no pricing indicator at all? Thanks. This is from Allie.
What do you think, Jared?
Well, I think we do it differently per company. And I think you should too, depending on where you are. I would say as you kind of get into like the upper tier, doing luxury and ultra luxury, there is absolutely probably not even a pricing indicator on most people's websites, because they're working with planners. And so planners aren't really asking for prices on the website, at least. They might reach out and ask for your pricing guide so they have an idea. And most wedding planners kind of in this world are operating on a percentage base. So they, you know, want your prices to be high because they're going to make more money.
Well, and also it's travel and it's much more complicated. Like, yes, you're expected to deliver basically an all-inclusive quote.
Right, right.
So it's different.
Yeah. You know, what I've always said, and I found this to be true, because one of our companies, we actually do list pricing, kind of our you know, pricing anywhere from $2,000 to $3,500, because I think our pricing is a selling point for us. people look at the quality and they probably think it's more.
And don't you think the customer at that price level expects it too?
Yeah, it's super transparent. I was on a phone call yesterday with a planner and she was like, I just appreciate that it's super transparent. You see exactly what you're getting right on the website. You know, we knew it was a right fit when we reached out because the price lined up. We didn't have to do this charade of like, let's dance around the question that we really want and figure out what pricing is. They knew exactly right up front. They called and they were essentially ready to book right away. So
you would be surprised how many people think that you wanting to get to know them is freaking annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody, nobody says this in our industry. Everybody advocates for like getting to know everyone. And it's like, I don't think you have to make a good film. If you do, you're a bad filmmaker. That's my opinion. Like you can make a better film by getting to know people a little bit, but you don't need to, like, I don't even think that's even getting to know someone, having an extra 30-minute conversation with them. But also, it doesn't mean you don't do it. Like with Huxley Film, I'm still going to make them have a conversation with me.
Right.
Like, I'm not advocating for no conversations with couples, but I know in my head, this person is not psyched about talking to me about this. Mm-hmm. They would rather do something else with their time. And like, when you know that people are like not excited about having a million conversations with you, you try to limit them. Yeah. And that's what you do. When you give your price out there, that you're just respecting that person's time and their way that they want to shop.
Right, right. We have to be realistic, guys, on like where we are in the, on the totem pole of like the booking process. You have to understand that people have already had a conversation with the venue, with the caterer, with potentially like a tent company, like the people that are actually producing the event, with a band leader, with a photographer, all the different people. You're probably after all of those people and probably more. And so by this time, they're kind of just like, oh, yeah, video is our last, you know, bow to tie kind of mm-hmm. thing. And so that's not offensive to me. But I think that we have to realize, like, at the end of the day, I want to make the booking process as easy as possible. I don't want it to be a mystery for them. I think a mystery is like, I don't know what I'm diving into here. So I'm going to be a little bit slower to like reach out because I'm not ready to make this commitment. It could be, you know, a long commitment of like you said, getting to know someone, getting a quote after a couple of days. Whereas I know when I post our prices to the website on Merriment, it's just, we are making it easy for them. And I know for the quality, I think we're cheaper than other
good
people.
Good value.
It's really good value. They can look at the film and be like, they're similar, but this guy's posting a pricing. Therefore, I'm going to reach out to them first.
The key here is like, if you're under $4,000, I mean, or whatever, maybe a certain percentage over what's average in your market. If your average price, a little less, maybe a little more, the person who's shopping for you is probably price conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be willing to spend a little bit more than they planned on. So it's not to say that they can't spend a little more than they think they should spend, but they are looking at price
right.
when they're shopping, and that does matter to them. And if you're new to this and if you're competing for those like $2,000 jobs, no shade on that. Like mm-hmm. that's great. You got to know though, that you're probably an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not being booked 2 years in advance. By the way, if you are getting booked 2 years in advance, you should turn that gig down at that price point because that ain't a good deal for you. But if you're probably not getting booked, like you said, you're at the end of the booking cycle and that person is going to be looking, right? In their shopping. And then they're going to be like, you know, 4-6 months before their wedding. They have this very, very compressed timeline. They don't want to mess around.
Right.
They're just like, oh yeah, this person, I can afford this person. Because the way they're shopping is, we got $2,000 left in the budget. Let's go find a videographer.
Mm-hmm.
That's the motivation of that shopping in that moment. And like that part of, as you level up in the industry, is you start being more of a priority.
Yep.
And so that's part of the privilege of getting better and getting more experience. A lot of people want to skip that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you can't book a full season with your pricing out there, probably don't change anything. Like, I think that's a big mile marker, is like, you book a full season with your pricing out there. You try, maybe you don't have to book a full season, but maybe you try starting price. If that doesn't affect your bookings, maybe you have enough demand and the right audience and you can just do inquire for price. But it's like, don't go too quickly on that trajectory, because if you just leave your audience in the dust, like if you don't have an audience of people who are perfectly fine, like price is no object, and they go to your site, they're going to be intimidated, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. So answer is kind of depending on where you are. And that's hard to kind of gauge, especially for newbies who are newer to the industry. That's going to be really hard to gauge. But I would say, and this is probably counter to what most people would say in the industry, is like, if you're a newbie, you should probably be listing your price because it's probably an advantage for you because you're probably priced less. So next question. Dan says, newbie here. I've loved listening to the podcast as I feel totally unequipped to run the business side of my company. I'm wondering how I can differentiate myself from the competition. I've tried to do things creatively that I feel like would separate me or my films from others, but getting the buy-in from couples has proven to be a challenge. Any advice would be helpful. Thanks.
Okay, so I'll take it back to our thing.
Okay.
Do you remember when we were trying to develop Huxley, we were messing around with a bunch of things, just from a brand identity standpoint?
Mm-hmm.
And I've told this story before probably, but we made this film, like we got this person reach out and they're like, oh, we want to do, like, it was a COVID wedding. And we're like, well, we're doing this thing. Can we try whatever we want?
Yeah.
And they're like, yes. And we did this edit and it was pretty cool. And it was a pretty cool edit for like a really weird two-person micro wedding. Not weird because of them. It's just like, when I think back on those micro weddings now, I'm like, so weird. Like, what a weird product.
Yeah.
Well, we tried something. And do you remember like that person's response was like, I don't want this. I want just like a chronological, boring wedding film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I would say, well, it wasn't really eye-opening for me, but it's a good example of like, you don't want, like when you're experimenting with differentiating yourself, you also need to realize like probably the average shopper who's like, and I know like that bothers people when I'm talking about like, they're shopping. They're just people looking to hire a wedding filmmaker. Probably just want the same thing that they saw. And there's a sameness to it. And it's like, a lot of people I think are tempted to abandon that because it bothers them. And I'm like, be careful.
Right, right. People do not care. We might get killed for this, but your average customer does not care about your films being different. I don't think. I just from experience.
Some do. I'm sure there's a person.
I'm sure there is. But I would say, especially if you're starting out, this is how you differentiate yourself, is you do exactly what you say you're going to do. You do it in a timely manner and you're a professional. That will differentiate yourself from other beginners in the industry because, believe it or not, people that first start their businesses are really bad at it. They're bad at delivering what they say. They're bad at communicating what they're delivering. They're bad. I would say just do a solid job. Don't try to be like create some avant-garde wedding film. It's not important. What is important is that you have a good structure, you work on your business, and you just make your clients happy.
Yeah, I would say the weirdness stuff, here's what I'll resonate with, Jared. You got to make what you feel good making, not just emotionally, but like what you feel you do best.
Right.
So say you're like, oh, I'm like an edgy person. I used to shoot hardcore concerts. Yeah. And so my films are going to have a certain edge to them.
Yeah.
And that's not for everyone. Like, I don't think you should try to jam yourself into a mold and something you're bad at. Do what you're good at, and it might be a little bit weird.
Totally.
That being said, I would say if it's too weird, that just be prepared for the negative consequences of that. And if you don't want the negative consequences, part of your artistic growth is going to figure out, how do I take, and this is everybody, it's a like there's an ego death that comes into this, which is like, this is what I like and what I'm good at. Can I merge what the customer expects, what the client expects, with what I like and I'm good at? And the best people will do this. Like, yeah. The very best people will do weird stuff, but also somehow, I feel like it's with fine dining. Do you remember going to Birch, that restaurant in Providence? And they would have like this really weird menu, and you would get this weird, like if you've gone to fine dining, especially like the gastronomy stuff, you'll get this weird like thing and you're like, what is this? And then it's like, oh, it's pork or burger. But you're like, this isn't a burger. This is like, and then you eat it and you're like, oh, it tastes like a burger.
Yeah.
This is familiar tasting.
This is constructed carrot and it's just a carrot.
Yeah. I mean, you eat it and you're like, oh, this does taste like a beef stew.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Even though like, they're like, we took a carrot and roasted it in beef bouillon and threw, and then there's no beef on the table.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yes.
And it's like fine dining often is taking unexpected ways of doing, and but also delivering a familiar experience. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like not weird. No one's like, I want weird food. Mm-hmm. Like there's good food and there's bad food. It's like, oh, this is weird. This mm-hmm. is, it's, I'm like, this is grass. I don't want to eat grass. It's so unique though. You're eating grass.
Yeah.
It's like,
no, so my problem with the whole thing is like most people that are saying this oftentimes are looking at it and they're like, well, I know the stigma associated with a wedding filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be like everyone else. I want to create my own films. I want to be seen as an artist. And a lot of these conversations oftentimes are beginners that are having it. How many times do you see people post on like Facebook? They're like, why are wedding films so like so much of a template?
Everyone, and then it's like been everyone doing does it for the same exact 14 thing. 14 months.
Be like, dude, you just started and I look at your work and your white balance is off. What are you talking about?
Like, well, and also like your work is not good.
Right.
And it's exactly the same as anyone. Even the things you think are unique are not unique. I've seen 100 other people do it.
Right.
Like is Bottle Brush unique? Then maybe they, for them, they are. Anyone who's copying Bottle Brush is not unique. Mm-hmm. Now they might be different than what most people are expecting, but I look at their work and I'm like, you're just copying Bottle Brush. It's the opposite mm-hmm. of unique. Mm-hmm. You literally pick the exact same font.
Yep.
And by the way,
yellow font, right?
Bottle Brush. And I think Grace and Andrew would be the first people to tell you are taking their inspirations. The reason you think it's unique is because you don't watch the movies that they do and they're cooler than you. Yeah. And they're watching Tarantino films and classic 70s and they're drawing from a lot of inspiration. They didn't invent that either.
Right, right.
So it's like, I think a lot of this pursuit of uniqueness is kind of a waste of time.
Yeah.
But I think authenticity is good.
Yeah, this is what I would say because it's from my favorite photography book, Chris Orwig. He writes, if you want to create more interesting art, become a more interesting person. So that's what I would say. If you want to create something better that's unique or whatever, do a good job with your wedding films, but just work on yourself, become a more interesting person, like better art, and then naturally
will
follow.
Interesting is more important than unique.
Right, right, right.
Unique can just be uncomfortable and bad.
Yeah.
Like, that's a wide range of things. I would just tell you, like, definitely be authentic, but also realize you're running a business, and you said so, like, oh, I don't know how to run the business. You got to sell stuff.
Right.
So what sells things is good value and good pricing, good service, and, like, somewhere down the line is having a unique offering.
Yep.
And it's not irrelevant, but it's like get that other stuff right and then worry about the being unique and standing out.
Yep. Good stuff. All right. Last question. Ben writes in. He says, how do you guys create relationship with the photographer? We had a couple super frustrating moments this last year with photographers who didn't give us time or any windows to shoot. I'm assuming during the portrait session is what he's talking about. There were also in many of our shots throughout the day, sometimes feels like it's intentional. I don't hate photographers, but it gets frustrating. What do you guys do?
I have many thoughts on this.
And if you want to hear Jason's thoughts, tune into his other podcast with Ben Chase.
That's what it's all about.
Yep.
Here's what I'll say. Just you're right to want to do this well because it's a very productive relationship. If you get it right, there are a lot of photographers that I really love who I actually don't like how they work. There's something about it that annoys me. They're in my way. Their portrait sessions are bad. They don't communicate. I think first things first is like try to extract like what they're doing with their camera from who they are as people. Like try to get to know people as people, first of all. Make just friends with them apart from those portrait sessions and you humanize people. And like if you're like talking to somebody and you're like having a good time and then like 8 hours into the day, you have a portrait session and they're a little bit annoying, you're going to feel very differently about it than if you just started the whole day with an adversarial thought about them and waited for them to confirm your adversarial thought. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Two, just basic crap, which is shoot on a longer lens than them. This is not complicated. Like whatever the lens, like learn lenses. And if they're on a 35, shoot on a 50, 85, 7200, whatever, 24-70. Just, you know, give yourself some reach so that you, A, can use that compression, and B, you can shoot over their shoulder in a productive way. And I think C is like, it's okay to advocate yourself for yourself. Like, if you're not getting what you want, I don't know. Have you encountered this much? If you ask for like, hey, can I have a shot? I don't think I've ever had a person say no.
No.
We can't do this.
I haven't. I think your first point about, you know, not creating an adversarial relationship like early on, like you have to have a good introductory kind of experience with somebody.
Oh, that first 5 minutes is everything.
Yeah. Like, and so, you know, that experience is important. Like just introducing yourself. Hey, how's it going? Like, hey, you know, this is, I want you to be happy. Let me know. Like, let's communicate kind of thing. Here's my cell phone number. Like, I even encourage our team, like, reach out to the photographer on Instagram beforehand.
I try to
And don't be offended if they don't respond to you. They will feel like I've had photographers reach out beforehand and I'll respond to them every single time. So they know, like, hey, I don't have any adversarial relationship or intention with you. But if I reach out to someone and they don't respond to me, almost always they'll be like, oh, I saw your Instagram message. I'm sorry. I didn't respond. I got busy. I'm like, oh, no worries. Like, you know, things are crazy. We're busy. And then they're like, okay, they're cool. Like, I like them. I owe them. Actually, I feel like they almost feel like they owe me like something when they don't respond. So I, you know, don't mind it. But they know where my heart is, which is half the battle. Like, you're winning, mm-hmm. you know, their hearts. Yeah. So that's some of it. Like, the first interaction, reaching out beforehand, like some things that you can do to just set the foundation of the day. If you're doing that, I think there are also some practical things you can do throughout the day. You mentioned one, like shooting on a longer lens. And also, some videographers really do this to themselves a little bit, where they'll set up 7 camera angles, one in the middle of the aisle, in places that, guys,
I find,
like,
it's actually mostly that they do it to themselves.
Just have a little bit of intuition of like where the photographer needs to be. Mm-hmm. You need to understand, like, they're going to need certain shots. You can't set up your tripod in the middle of the aisle, the shooting right down the middle of the mm-hmm. aisle, because you know the photographer is going to be there, right? You don't get exclusive rights to the middle aisle.
Well, and they're not going to grab your tripod and move it for you. So yeah. It's like, and they're not going to come up to you in the middle of the thing and interrupt you and say, can I move it? I really need a shot.
Yep.
It's, yeah, I mean, I think most of the time when I see people complain about this, I'm like, guaranteed you're the problem.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of times, again, it is kind of beginners that are doing that. Oftentimes, like, I think mirroring what the photographer is doing is something that
let them set the pace
can help. Like, if the bride's walking down the aisle and you guys are on opposite sides of the aisle, both shooting the same way, understand, just having a little bit of anticipation of, like, as the bride walks farther down the aisle, you guys are going to be cross-firing each other. Just like, obviously, like, you didn't think of that beforehand.
Even like, something
be
like
on the side of the photographer, so you guys are shooting side by side, and you're able to communicate a little bit. You're working as a mm-hmm. team. Like, these are just like obvious things to me that I'm just like, have a little bit of anticipation, right?
And also just ask people, like, don't. So I don't ask people. I don't say, here's what I'm gonna do. I say, what are you gonna do here?
Yeah.
And make them like explain themselves. I'll be like, recession. What are you gonna do? Mm-hmm. How far up are you gonna go?
Mm-hmm.
Are you comfortable with I stand over your shoulder? Are you gonna walk backwards?
Yeah.
Or are you gonna turn around and book it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, all that stuff matters to how I shoot my shot. Now, I'm getting prepared. I'm not making it their problem. I'm giving myself the information I need. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna pivot to whatever they do.
Yeah.
So if they're gonna like run up and then run to the back and shoot, I'm gonna run up and run to the back.
Right.
And
right.
I'm gonna anticipate that. And I'll even ask them, like, are you gonna have them stop and kiss or no?
Right.
Cause like, I hate that gimbal move when I'm like, da-da-da, and the person goes stop and I'm like, and it's like that. That's all on me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go like, oh, this stupid photographer. They got in my shot. They ran to the back. They made the couple stop. It's like, that's not, yeah. They're not doing anything wrong by shooting the way that they always shoot.
Yep. And I would say too, like, you are helping the photographer understand their process too by asking them questions like that. Like, what's your plan here? They have to think through it, because usually photographers, if they're not working with a lot of videographers, they're just used to just doing whatever the hell they want to do.
They're just winging it.
They're just winging it. Like, it helps their game plan a little bit. I worked with a photographer this last year, Crane Estate, beautiful, like, awesome property. And the first look, we had two videographers. She had herself and two other photographers. So they were deep, all shooting this first look. This is five people. And I'm like, what do you want? What do you want is your background? We'll just set up so that we can, you know, arrange it. And we got there about 10 minutes early. We set everything up. Groom's going to be in one spot. She's going to walk this way. Okay, if I have my camera here and I have my other camera here, is that going to interfere? No, that'd be great, blah, blah, blah. And then as the moment is unfolding, she totally changes everything. She's like, let's do this. So, like, I understand the frustration of working with photographers. Mm-hmm. The thing that frustrates me the most is when they don't do exactly what they say they're going to do. If they say, oh, I'm going to go from here to here, and then halfway down they completely change it, and they're like, can we move your camera? I'm like, I told you it was going to be here. You said it was fine. Now you're changing things? And I'll just be like, I can't. You know, I don't care, because it's literally the groom heard me tell the photographer, like, hey, do you mind if this is here? It just makes her look bad at the end of the day. So I don't know. I think at that point I would stand my ground and just be like, we just talked about this. Like, no.
Well, I think there's one other wrinkle to this, like, because I don't want to make it seem like I have all these great interactions or I never get angry at photographers. Mm-hmm. You want to make me angry? Screw up the schedule.
Yeah, right.
Like, if you are just making us late, I have no patience. That's such a bush league thing to do.
Yeah.
So that being said, you know, I can think of a lot of situations. First looks are particularly heinous. Toasts where they just stand in front of your camera the whole time. Mm-hmm. Little things like that. You have to decide, is this worth escalating or not?
Yeah.
And have to have like that conversation actively in your mind. Even like retaining that resentment so enough to bring it to a Facebook group.
Right.
Like, you're so mad about it that you had to go post about it.
Well, usually someone's editing and they are just raging because the photographer's in their
but
shot.
But it's like, I've done plenty of first looks where the person's like, second shooter doesn't even come. They're just some random person that they have second shooting.
Yeah.
They show up. They're just orbiting the whole time.
Yeah, the second shooter thing. Like the second shooter is someone that I'll be like, you know, I'll be kind to every time. I'm just like, hey, you know,
Can you not do exactly what you're doing?
You're literally just mirroring what the lead photographer is doing. You're over their shoulder. I need to be in this area. Like, you know, get out of the way.
but like at the end of the day, I'm a little bit annoyed. And then I'm just like, okay, like this is what this person's going to do.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to do X. Like, I'm going to be the professional and handle it.
Yeah.
And like, then I move on and I don't, if you just like let it go.
Yeah.
And the person will be like, wow, that was a great session, right?
Yeah.
That was great. Didn't we have a good time? And like, the photographer's vibe is all good.
Yeah. This is what I would say. Is it the times that I have any kind of conflict whatsoever with the photographer is probably like one in every 300 weddings that mm-hmm. I've shot. I think that I've shot with plenty of photographers, and plenty of photographers who are out there have referred us who I hate working with. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, what's more important? Is it important that you get the work or that you have, you know, the best experience shooting? Like,
well, and
that's up for you to decide. I want the money, so I'll take their referral.
Even just from a human standpoint, would you rather be a person that has enough grace in class that people know that they don't think you're mad at them, mm-hmm. even though you are?
Yeah.
What would be the benefit of them knowing?
Right.
So I just think it's like, this is a put on your big boy pants moment most of the time.
Yep.
Very infrequently. The only time I would tell you, if someone just straight up disrespects you, maybe that's a conversation.
Right.
And if somebody is not hurting minimal things about your video, where it's like, I could have had a slightly better shot, but like literally making it so that you can't deliver your film.
Yeah.
Like, I think you can have a conversation at that point.
I think a lot of videographers, though, the problem is you just have a quick trigger finger. Have a happy trigger finger. Like, you're going to blow up when you should just let it slide.
How much do you think of it is people don't even really know? They don't have a clear idea of what they need. Mm-hmm. And so they feel like they have to grasp at straws the whole day.
Right.
Like, every moment is critical to them because they're not thinking in their head like, I don't need this. I already got the shot I need.
Right. And you see the same thing with photographers too. The photographers that get irritated the most are beginners that really don't know what they're doing. They're like, they think it's your fault that they're not getting the shots that they want, which is just asinine and crazy. Like, right? Like,
yeah. It, you don't.
The people that I see that are super frustrated versus the people that are super calm, it's always experienced people are usually pretty calm. They're like, yeah, I've been here before.
The amount of times people go like this, oh, do you need anything else? No, and I'm like, no, I got everything. Mm-hmm. I know I got everything I need. Yeah. So like literally I don't need to shoot anymore. I'm done. We can move on.
Yeah.
Like literally like the second I move into I got what I need mode, mm-hmm. I'm all about just creating good vibes. And mm-hmm. I just let the photographer do whatever I want. They step in front of me.
Yep.
Don't care.
Yep.
And it's like the more people would do that, the better. So anyway, yep. Hopefully you enjoyed that show, guys, and you learned a little bit. Don't forget to submit questions.
Guys, and again, if you do want to submit your questions, go to weddingfilm.school/AMA. It's a slash, right? /AMA. And that's where you can, ask your question to be read on the air and answered by Jason and myself. Guys, thank you for listening to this episode of the Wedding Film School Show AMA. We'll see you in a couple weeks.